Okay, good evening, everybody. Welcome to this open floor hearing. My name is David Prentice, and I'm the lead member of the panel that has been appointed by the Secretary of State as the examining authority under Section 65 of the Planning Act 2008 in order to examine this nationally significant infrastructure project. I'm just going to start by asking my fellow panel members to introduce themselves.
Good evening, everybody. My name's Guy Rigby.
Good evening, I am David Cliff.
Good evening, I'm Roger Catchpole.
And our task is to prepare a report with a recommendation to the Secretary of State for Business, Energy and Industrial Strategy. The project is an offshore wind farm and the application has been made by Ørsted Hornsea Project 3 UK Limited, who I shall refer to in this hearing as the applicant. Now, offshore, the various components of the scheme would include up to 300 wind turbine generators, accommodation platforms and substations, together with a network of connecting cables and export cables leading to the landfall. In the event that high-voltage alternating current transmission is used, there would also be offshore booster stations. The onshore works would include cables from the landfall near Weybourne to a grid connection at Norwich Main National Grid substation. And there will be a substation to the south of the A47 near Swordston. And in the event that high voltage alternating current transmission is used, there would be a booster station south of Little Barningham Lane. You'll find information about this application and the documents produced for this examination on the National Infrastructure Planning website. This has a homepage for this particular project, Hornsea Project 3. And there are further pages that set out the application procedure, the timetables, all the representations that have already been made, and the various documents that we generated during the course of the examination. So I just want to start with the procedure for the hearing, just some housekeeping. I haven't been given any specific emergency procedures, but I'm not expecting any fire alarms. So if the alarm goes off, there are at least two ways directly into the outside from this room. The toilets are off the corridor immediately to this side of the room here. If there are any phones or electronic devices that have not already been turned to silent mode, I'd be grateful if you could do that now. There is an agenda for tonight's meeting, which was published on our website last week. But essentially, all interested parties who wish to make oral representations have been invited to attend and to participate in this hearing if they wish. In view of the numbers, although we indicated we might set a time limit, we're not seeing at present the need to do that at present. So unless we have a sudden last-minute rush of people wanting to speak, we won't be cutting you off after 5 minutes. The subject matter for this open floor hearing is not set by the agenda. Your comments should be based on the representation you've made, but subject to that, you can talk about anything that you think is important and relevant to the application and the decision that we shall have to write a report on for the Secretary of State. If we think you are moving off matters that are relevant to planning, then we may interject briefly just to explain that and to move things along. How long will we be here? Well, as long as people want to be heard, we will be here this evening. I'm going to go through the list of people who have indicated that they will wish to speak shortly, and then I will ask whether there are others who wish to speak. Just a brief word on recording. All hearings associated with national infrastructure examinations are recorded. Those recordings are uploaded to our website. And that is done so that members of the public who are interested in the application but may not be able to be here tonight can find out what has happened. That's why I'm using a microphone, and that's why it's important when you come to speak that you use a microphone too. You can tell when they're switched on because this red light comes on, and I would ask you to remember to switch it off when you've finished because you can only have four on at a time with this system. If you need to speak at some point and you are not seated at a table with a microphone, if you could raise your hand and one of our staff will bring a microphone to you. When you come to speak, please do give your name before you start to say anything, because otherwise that's for the benefit of the audio recording. It's very important to have the name so that people listening can follow what's going on. Clearly, if you take part, it's obvious that you understand that it will be recorded. Your comments will be, and those comments will be recorded, and that will be published and retained, and that's usually for 5 years from the Secretary of State's decision. The Inspector is, of course, subject to the general data protection regulations. It's very likely that we will, very unlikely, that we will ask you to put any sensitive personal information into the public domain, and indeed we would encourage you absolutely not to do that. If for some reason you feel it's necessary that you should refer to some sensitive personal information, then we would encourage you to speak to our case team first, and we will then explore with you whether there's some other way that information can be put in, perhaps in a written format, which could be redacted before being published. Social networking. If anyone intends to use social media or to report or film during the hearing, you are free to do so, but please do so in a way that doesn't interfere with the smooth running of the event. It mustn't be disruptive or distract other parties taking part. And only the recording that is made by PINS and put on the website, that is the only official record or that can be relied on in evidence, because that will be a complete recording. If there's anyone who has any objection to being filmed, if they could just indicate now. We do have representatives from the applicant here tonight. They will have an opportunity at the end of the hearing to respond briefly to any points made. But I should just say, I'm not looking for a sort of comprehensive response on the planning merits. Rather, it's an opportunity to signpost information that may already be in the examination documents, or to indicate where perhaps there are matters that may still be work in progress. And the timetable that we set out for this examination sets a deadline of 14th of December for any written submissions of the oral cases that are made this evening. Just to introduce our other colleague from the Planning Inspectorate, Kay Sully here, sitting to the side of the room, is the case manager leading the PINS case team for this application. And if you have any queries about any administrative matters regarding the examination, then Kay is the person to speak to about that. I've been given a list of those intending to speak, and I'm going to check first that they are here, and then I'll ask whether there's anyone else. Sir Edward Evans Lom. Okay, could you just put your microphone on, please?
NFU is representing him. I'm not sure his agent is intending to.
Okay.
Be here.
Alton Parish Council. And who are you, sir? Do you just want to introduce yourself?
It's Paul Killingback, Chair, Alton Parish Council.
And Alison Shaw, Alton Parish Council. And then we also have another member here.
Fiona Glenser, a parishioner.
Do you want to go on, Susan?
My name's Susan Mather, Alton Parish Council.
I'm sorry, I got three names there, but I think there might have been four. I've got Paul Killingbeck, Alison Shaw and Susan Mather.
It's Fiona Glenser, and I'm a parishioner at Alton.
Sorry, could you spell your surname for me, please?
G-L-E-N-S for sugar, E-R.
Thank you. Then I have Bidwells on behalf of Carl Baker and David Baker and some other parties.
None of them are coming individually tonight, so I'm Louise Staples from the National Farmers Union, and I'll be representing on behalf of all landowners here this evening and their agents who are acting.
Okay. Thank you. Councillor Graham Everett.
Well, thank you, sir. Yes, Councillor Graham Everett, Broughton District Council, Reefham Ward.
Ray and Diane Pearce.
Yes, Mr. Prentice, we're here, and I'll be speaking on behalf of both of us.
Thank you. UK Power Network. No. National Farmers Union, we've just heard from Ms. Staples, thank you. The Crown Estate. I have here Mr. Curry, but not wishing to speak. Is that correct, Mr. Curry? Yeah. Broadland District Council.
The area planning manager will be coming tomorrow, so I'm basically here tonight just to represent as elected member. The area planning manager, Matthew Rook,
okay,
will be attending tomorrow.
Thank you very much, Councillor Everett. Those are the people who... sorry, I should ask... who is here to represent the applicant tonight?
Andrew Guyton, the Consents Manager.
Thank you, Mr. Guyton.
Claire Broderick, Pinsent Masons, solicitor for the applicant.
Thank you. Thank you. Those are all the people who indicated they wish to speak. Is there anyone else here this evening who would like to speak? Yes, sir.
John Hurst on behalf of Morton on the Hill Parish Council.
Sorry, was that Hurst?
Hurst, H-U-R-S-T.
Thank you. Anyone else? Well, thank you for that. I will hear the people in the order that I read the names out. That completes the introductions. Before I move to inviting the first person to speak, has anyone got any questions of procedural or preliminary questions they want to ask before we do that, or are you now ready to move on to make your contributions? Okay. In that case, I invite Alton Parish Council. So who's going to... Are you proposing to do the whole presentation, or are you going to say some bits and pass on to...
Yes, Paul Killingback, Chair, Oldham Parish Council. I have a presentation to make, and then our resident, Mrs. Glenser, would like to make a separate presentation, if that's okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Oldham Parish Council welcomes this opportunity to provide a brief summary of recent developments in relation to the main construction compound, which is to be located in Oldham. It was mentioned in Orsted's Appendix 20 at Deadline 1 that the model for this compound at Oulton is the Holton-Leclay compound in Lincolnshire for Hornsey 1. Oulton Parish Council has studied the operation of the Hornsey 1 compound through LPA documents and Holton PC minutes, all of which have given rise to significant concerns as to the future management of the compound proposed here in Oulton. At Holton-Leclay, residents have complained about persistent breaches of planning conditions, including construction traffic management measures, use of generators beyond a specified period of time, and agreement on working hours, especially early on Sunday mornings. Of similar concern is Orsted's application to vary a planning condition on the decommissioning of that compound, and their decision to attempt to reuse the compound for their subsequent project, Hornsey 2. None of this behaviour fosters a feeling of confidence in Hornsey 3 on the part of the residents of Oulton. Since Deadline 2, Oulton Parish Council has met with the lead construction and lead traffic engineers from Vattenfall to discuss the likely cumulative impact of Vanguard's two compounds also being sited in our parish and sharing the same access route to the Holt Road. Their vehicle movement numbers are only slightly lower than Orsted's. Oulton Parish Council is relieved to hear that these two major projects are finally working together on trying to evaluate their combined impact, but we are obliged to point out that Vattenfall have done little research of their own and are currently relying heavily on the assessments made by Orsted. Any omissions or mistakes made by Orsted at this stage will, therefore, simply be duplicated by the other project. Although we note that Orsted are attempting to improve the reality checking of their vehicle movement figures, Oulton Parish Council maintain that our concerns that the volumes of competing existing traffic of all kinds, especially agricultural and commuter traffic, are still being underestimated. Whatever happens, the existence of Orsted's compound will have severe adverse impacts on our parish over 8 to 10 years in terms of environmental degradation, highway dysfunction, and loss of quality of life through noise, light, and emissions. For some residents, this loss will be extreme. The following is a short section from a statement given to us by the residents of the old railway gatehouse, who apologised that they could not appear tonight at the meeting. They say, "We are seriously concerned about the impact this is going to have on our lives. 8 to 10 years is a long time, and our quality of life will be greatly marred. Constant traffic noise will put an end to us even being able to sit and enjoy our garden. We do not wish any of the construction traffic to pass our house, as it would be detrimental to our health and sanity." So, in an attempt to limit this and other damage, Oulton Parish Council is now concentrating on promoting the idea that Orsted should construct their own dedicated access route directly off the Holt Road, as we described in Option R at Deadline 2. In a recent email, Orsted outlined to us the current status of their consideration of Option R. Oulton Parish Council is relieved that these avenues are being pursued, but notes also the applicant's clearly stated continuing commitment to Option 1, passing places. Oulton Parish Council feels obliged to express today to the panel its concern that given the advanced stage of these proceedings, there is a danger that Orsted's exploration of Option R might constitute little more than a PR exercise, and that the applicant may well seize upon any and every obstacle that emerges as justification for abandoning it. Whatever the outcome, we believe that we need to keep arrangements for the main construction compound within the DCO in order to maintain a rigorous control on its future management. The LPA simply has not got the resources to exercise such control appropriately. We therefore urge the panel to encourage the applicant to use their best endeavours seriously to consider option R and work to overcome any obstacles in its way. For instance, as a result of the recently conducted road safety audit, NCC Highways might feel that with a few alterations to the plan that they have to withdraw their holding objection to option one. But this does not in itself mean that Highways considers that option one is the best solution for access. Finally, we think it is not unreasonable to suggest to Orsted that they actively consider extending their collaboration with Vattenfall such that these two projects might share the cost and the use of a single dedicated access route from the Holt Road, thus removing their construction traffic entirely from the public highway of Oldham Street. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gillingbeck.
Hello.
Ms. Spencer.
Sorry, I've got a bit of a sore throat, but we live
Could you just give your name for the...
Sorry, my name is Fiona Glenser, and we live at the Manor House and have done so for the last 8 years. Our house is directly opposite the proposed site. When we first arrived here, there was some cable laying going on through the farmland in question. We were concerned about this as it was not mentioned when we were looking at the house. So we drove past one evening in July to be surprised by enough work lights to light a runway, and they were very, very intrusive. We were assured by the agents, who are Savills, that the work was almost finished, and we investigated, and indeed it finished a few weeks after we moved in, and nothing else seemed pending. Then a few years ago, we had to put up with the construction of a solar farm. The site of this is slightly further away than the Orsted compound, and yet the work lights from this were very intrusive, and there was also some building noise. We managed to persuade the site manager to turn the lights off at a certain time so they didn't shine directly into our daughter's bedroom window. The screening process for the solar farm still isn't finished, and we can see the solar farm from the windows upstairs, although we were assured at the beginning that this would not be the case. We're hoping that once the hedging has grown, it will be a lot better. At the moment, the farmland opposite is used for pigs. The Orsted compound will be immediately beyond this field. This, at least, is a more rural view. As the farmland is completely flat, we can hear the pigs, the tractors and feeders, as well as the occasional traffic from the Holt Road. Already the noise of the tractors can be intrusive as they go at great speed because the old runway is a hard standing. And it's very easy for them, and I think quite fun for the farmers, to go as fast as they can, and they rattle as they go. Having looked through your proposal and plans, the thought of 8 to 10 years of building work on our doorstep is a bit frightening. Here is a list of the things that we're most concerned about. Firstly, an ugly landscape of cables, vehicles and porter cabins, some of which I know will be double height. Work lights which will reach far into that landscape and indeed into our house. Noise from traffic on the site which will also reach far on that landscape because there's no hedges or anything like that that stop that noise. Noise from generators which are apparently going to be running continually according to the proposals. The timing of the working schedule, i.e. early morning and Saturdays also, and the fact that it is for 8 to 10 years, which is a hell of a long time. What we find most extraordinary that these plans and proposals have been made and have reached this stage without one single person from the planning authority contacting us and asking them to look at our landscape from our viewpoint in the light of something like this going ahead. And I just don't know why that is. And it's very clearly on the plan that our house is closest to the compound. Our neighbours who aren't here tonight have got a slightly different aspect of their house, so they don't look directly onto that field, but they are right next door to us, so some of their bedroom windows do. And I think that they're also concerned about the potential noise. Anyway, that's all I have to say at the moment.
Thank you very much. Okay. Thank you very much. Councillor Everett.
Thank you. Graham Everett, Broughton District Councillor for Reform Ward. I've already put my written submission into the inspectorate, so I don't intend to repeat what I've actually said in that submission. However, just to summarise there, regarding the accompanied site visits, I've requested that site visits, and I can imagine the inspectorate would wish to carry them out of their own fruition anyway. It's the village of Alton and the airfield area that has been discussed today, and also the crossing area that does affect in my area, with just off the B1145, just outside of Reefham, where Orsted and Vattenfall cables actually cross. So I request to accompany on a site visit for them areas, but I would imagine they are sites that the inspectorate would require to see anyway. Just one further comment I had was on ducting, and obviously we're not comparing Vattenfall with Orsted, but as they're both coming similar, you do see the similarities and the differences into there. I've spoken to the applicant today, and they've more reassured me on the ducting, putting the phase one in at the same time. If they could put ducting in for phase two, depending on their CFD bids into there, they would do that, but I appreciate they may not be able to do that. But I feel more confident now on what's been proposed from the applicant on the ducting, and if it is feasible and practical, they will be putting the ducting in for phase two at the same time as phase one. So the whole idea as a representative is to minimise effect. There is effect, except there will be an effect in the area, but it's just to minimise that effect. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. Just on the site visit, we haven't published the schedule of site visits yet. That's being looked at, but we certainly would be intending to look at the proposed site of the compound and indeed the point where the cable's crossing. They would definitely be on our list of sites to look at. Mr. Pearce.
Thank you, Mr. Prentice. Ray Pearce, talking on behalf of my wife. We have a property which is 80 metres from the crossing point. We have had meetings with the applicant's representatives who have tried to be helpful, I believe, but the documents that we've been presented with are certainly difficult to handle and quite cumbersome for a public inquiry. If I could just refer to the crossing point specifically and to the statement of common ground between the Hornsea Project 3, Norfolk Vanguard and Norfolk Boreas. This was signed on the 5th of November, but the interaction between these companies, this should have been discussed certainly in the pier, and in the scope before the pier. To now have it in the public sphere at the planning inspectorate stage, I think, is inadequate. On that, the interaction and development of the crossing point, to our knowledge, is subject to a commercial non-disclosure agreement, which again is not conducive to examination in the public consultation. Indeed, para 2.5 of the Statement of Common Ground states that taking into account Norfolk Vanguard information was not publicly available at the point of submission of the application, being the DCO. And I believe that was because it was hampered by the imposition of a non-disclosure agreement. As I said, the document was only signed on the 5th of November. It's far too late for any cumulative impacts to be reviewed by the public of the crossings point specifically. And that's before the DCO application, obviously. The cumulative assessment within the Statement of Common Ground is not adequate for this stage of the consultation, as it only comments on, quote, the likely effects from other development activities, despite Orsted claiming that they have a wealth of experience from other projects. So if they have a wealth of experience, they should know what some of these effects would be. The cumulative impact assessment within the Statement of Common Ground is deficient, as it only considers Norfolk Boreas details where sufficient details are available. Clearly, for the onshore development, Norfolk Boreas, being in the same trench as Norfolk Vanguard, is, for all intents and purposes, exactly the same. Again, the cumulative impact assessment claims it incorporates an appropriate level of pragmatism, whatever that means. And I say that with tongue-in-cheek. What does that mean, an appropriate level of pragmatism, for an impact assessment? With regards to the crossing point, the Statement of Common Ground makes clear, and you can see that all the pages are green, that there are no significant cumulative effects identified for geology and ground conditions. I would contest that with 6 gigawatts of energy just below the surface, this will heat the ground up significantly. They also claim there's no effect with hydrology or flood risk. Again, I would contest that heating effect from multiple cables will affect the water course in the locale of the crossing point. The ecology and nature of conservation is also identified as having no significant effect. Post-operation, and as identified by the councillor, there will be industrial strength plastic ducting left in the ground once the cables are removed from it. This is certainly not in line with government policy for single-use plastics. We, the public, are currently crushing plastic bottles to make sure they don't go in the ground, but these companies could be leaving significant amounts of plastic just below the surface, which will affect generations of people to come. Again, the Common Ground Statement states that there's no impact on landscape or visual. Well, position of our property, construction phase for both Hornsea 3, Norfolk Vanguard and Boreas will, of course, be in view of our property, especially Hornsea 3's proposed secondary construction yard at Sol, just on the B1145. There will also be a considerable period of time which will affect our holiday let business. We have holiday lets at the property. These will be affected adversely, not only by the transports, the B1145, the noise from the construction, the time period, as there's two developers going into one field. And at the moment, it could even curtail our business, as has been indicated by our current letting agents, who will not market our property if a DCO is granted due to the construction being planned in advance. So holiday lets are obviously marketed in advance, a year, sometimes 2 years. Well, they won't market it for us if there's any such planned activity next to our property. Traffic and transport, just to add to what's already been said, is our opinion that the crossing point will attract a prolonged amount of heavy traffic for a yet as to be disclosed period of time to construct the crossing point. This will also affect us adversely and directly. However, with all of the statements of common ground, there's plenty in there which warrants further consideration from both projects. If I may move on to, as the project team know, my pet issue is electromagnetic fields, EMFs. In the Statement of Common Ground, I'm grateful that there are now some figures, but this project has only provided theoretical figures of the effects of high-voltage AC cables crossing high-voltage AC, or high voltage DC crossing high voltage DC. The fact of the matter is that now Norfolk Vanguard have opted for a DC transmission system, then in all likelihood there could be high voltage AC over DC or under DC. So where are the figures for this configuration? As I said, the cables could go over or under, and to my certain knowledge, any AC component will induce currents in a DC cable. A DC cable will have its own strong, albeit static magnetic field, like putting a bar magnet in a strong AC field, so there will be currents induced in the other cables. This is not addressed at all anywhere in the planning application. The project states it will be compliant with the voluntary code of practice regarding EMFs, the UK voluntary code of practice. But codes of practice, as we all know, regarding health change all of the time. Just by way of example, safe use of alcohol, smoking historically, or currently the use of aspirin to avoid heart attacks, are just some of the examples which spring to mind, which have changed in voluntary codes of practice. And I'd like to point out that Glenfell Tower was clad in accordance with a voluntary code of practice. So what should we do as members of the public if these cables are not compliant with the code of practice? All of the risk is being placed upon the public and very little risk being placed upon the developers. Without a firm plan of where the cables, the developers are going to use, what transmission system they're going to use vis-a-vis high voltage AC or high voltage DC, the Hornsea 3 project don't even know if their cables will go under or over the Vattenfall cables, which is Vanguard and Boreas. Therefore, there can be no conclusions made on the impact of the crossing point regarding the environment, watercourse, EMFs, or interaction between the two sets of cables, until they know which cables are on top, which are underneath, whether they're going to be DC or AC. They can make no assumptions. The cables, to my knowledge, have a minimum depth and a maximum depth. The minimum depth has been specified. The maximum depth for heat dissipation has not been, because they haven't spec'd out the cables. So these could produce a significant amount of heat. Therefore, the depth that they go to, even with horizontal direct drilling, is pertinent. In our opinion, it's imperative that a plan is disclosed and adhered to if the crossing point is to be safe, not only for us, but for the public as a whole. I'd like to point out that there's nowhere else in the UK where 6 gigawatts of energy passes one point in the ground. And for other people, 6 gigawatts of energy is 5 times the maximum output of Sizewell B power station. Yet to date, there's no detailed planning for the public or the planning inspectorate to consider. Only a bunch of assumptions and an inconclusive design, interaction and cooperation agreement contained within the Statement of Common Ground. Reading that, it is just waffle. It is nothing. Nothing agreed between them at all. And this doesn't adequately address the potential issues. I'd also like to point out that having a large dependent energy supply in such a small space makes that crossing point a vulnerable point for national security. If we're dependent on this energy, then it would be very easy for a foreign power or even a terrorist to very quickly cut off the power supply, because you've put all your eggs in one very small basket. Within the Statement of Common Ground, there is no indication of who will manage the coexistence of the projects which means they could actually be at odds with each other. And I would suggest that if either of them has an approved DCO, that somebody takes the lead. Finally, I'd just like to come on to the National Grid, who, as far as we're concerned, is the villain of the piece. The licence for the allocation of grid connections was issued to National Grid PLC with denationalisation in 1989. This means that grid connections are allocated to developers on a first-come, first-served application process, which is haphazard and uncoordinated. Without coordination, Norfolk will be subject to an array of crisscross cable trenches as more and more offshore wind farms are brought online. Indeed, the National Group Grid Group website trumpets, and I find it very odd, how we made the first offshore wind farm to be built in the USA possible by constructing the undersea cable that connects it to the grid. And that is National Grid. So being a UK national company, why do they not make all of the UK's offshore wind farms viable by constructing the connectivity to our national electricity transmission system, NETS? National Grid's purpose, statement, is to bring energy to life, but their decision will adversely affect and unnecessarily damage the lives of thousands of people in Norfolk. And the decision I'm talking about is to connect, for Orsted to connect at South Norwich, and Vanguard and Boreas to connect at Necton. Clearly, if you look at a map, you can see that the landfall site for Orsted, Hornsea 3, is much, much closer to Necton. Moving on, National Grid's is the electricity system operator, the NGESO, and is responsible for the NETS, the electricity transmission system. However, in April of 2019, electricity transmission will become a separate company within the National Grid Group, and the National Grid Energy Electricity System Operator. So electricity transmission will become a separate company. Importantly, National Grid Electricity Transmission will then be able to bid for and run the onshore transmission system as assets after the OFTO process. Well, this to me is a conflict of interest, where you've got a for-profits company allocating grid connection points, offloading its electricity transmission company into the group, which can then make a profit from them. Therefore, I'd say the decision is not necessarily as clear as has been stated to the public. There's a conflict of interest by allowing the current National Grid PLC to make unfettered decisions under cover of an outdated licence, causing unnecessary damage to the environment by their allocation of uncoordinated connections for offshore wind farm developers. There is an alternative. I provided a map for them so they can see it, to build an offshore extension to the NETS, which could collect and import electricity to, say, Walpole or Sizewell, without the need to decimate the Norfolk countryside with hundreds of kilometres of buried cables, which will, after all, only have a 25-year operational life. Just to conclude, there would be no need to discuss the crossing points or waste the time of the planning inspectorate if National Grid had adopted a pragmatic approach to the allocation of connection points and directed Hornsea 3 to Necton and Norfolk Vanguard and Boreas to Norwich Main. In my humble opinion, the decision of National Grid was commercial, not in the public's interest, and in order to generate profits from future renewable energy by diversifying and devolving its electricity transmission business. Both Orsted and Vattenfall's agreement to have extensive environmentally damaging transmission systems is questionable, but understandable, as the transmission systems will eventually be sold through OFTO, they won't be the ongoing managers of their transmission systems. Clearly, there is no need to cross these cables, but before any DCO is forthcoming, neither company should be allowed to hide behind the permissive legislation and not provide an engineered plan of how their respective cables will physically cross and what impacts there will be at the crossing point. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Pearce. Just a couple of questions. I missed a date. You mentioned the National Grid transmission systems would become a separate company at a particular date.
Yes, sir. That's April 2019. If you go to the National Grid website, which will give you a nice advert about what they're doing in USA, you have to go to the upper band and select GB. And in GB,
it's very kind of you, but we don't go off looking for evidence on websites. But okay. You've given the just explaining how the system works. But yes. you've given us that information, so thank you for that. The other thing I wanted to ask you about was you mentioned the effect of the cables on each other and inducing currents and causing heating, and I understood your point about not being fully able to assess that without knowledge of whether each cable was AC or DC. But you went on to say not knowing which one was on top. I didn't quite follow why that point, what the significance of that point.
So if the AC cable was on top of the DC cable, then the AC cable would be dominant and would... the EMF would basically come out of the ground and then dissipate. If the AC cable was below the DC cable, then it's effectively got a static field above it, and there could be an amplifying effect. And I don't understand why they've only given AC in their documentation and DC, when clearly there is the case for AC, DC, I know that's a pun, but yes, AC-DC could be a configuration that could be granted. And maybe Hornsey 3 would like to make an early decision to go to DC as well, which would certainly help the environment, as the cable trench would be less wide and narrower and less cables. There wouldn't be a need for a substation. So I don't know why we can't be pushed in that direction to have a DC system.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Louise Staples.
Thank you. Yes, I'm Louise Staples from the National Farmers Union. We're here this evening representing the Land Interest Group. So that's all the agents that are acting on behalf of the landowners who are their clients, and then they're also our members. I'm actually only going to raise some issues that we're actually hoping going forward there will be a specific issue hearing on. I'm not going to raise in detail... our issues tonight, but just highlight the ones that we hope are going to be covered going forward. So the first, actually, which follows on nicely from Mr. Pearce, is our concern in regard to the AC and DC cables. We would like to understand further why Ørsted feel that they cannot agree to take forward the DC cables rather than the AC cables. As highlighted in our submission, we believe and understand that DC cables would have less impact on farm businesses on a day-to-day business once they have been constructed. We understand that this will be discussed tomorrow morning in regard to AC and DC cables, and we hope that is the case, that all the issues that have been raised this evening in regard to AC and DC will be heard fully. Our second issue is in regard to construction. And we understand that Orsted will use reasonable endeavours to complete construction works within a period of 2 years from the date of entry of each phase. That is the last clarification that we have received from Orsted. We are still concerned about that in regard to timings of construction and it happening in two phases, and that again is because of the impact on farm businesses on a day-to-day basis with having two construction phases. Landowners would like to see ducts and not just have cables laid in open trenches. If they can lay ducts, then this would enable the construction, most of the construction, to only happen once rather than in two phases, and that's our understanding. But we'd like further clarification on that. Moving on then with construction and about the two phases, linked to that is the funding. And we have raised concerns in both our submissions about the funding that Orsted is intending to use for the scheme. We did raise initially the question of actually should Orsted be seeking a DCO for the second phase if they don't have funding secured to support that. Then our fourth issue is link boxes. We still would like to receive further information in regard to the design of link boxes and how these will look in the land. They have the biggest impact after construction has been completed, as they will always affect day-to-day agricultural operations if they're located within a field. Landowners would like them all to be located in boundaries, but we understand there are difficulties with doing that because normally the link boxes are at the end of every run of cables. So we would like that those issues there on link boxes to be discussed more fully. Then linked to that, other issues in regard to effects on agricultural operations are the details in regard to field drainage, soil aftercare and water supplies, if these are affected. We have now been discussing these areas in detail on a voluntary basis, but at the present time, I have not been able to find this wording or the detail that we've been agreeing on a voluntary basis within the DCO, or as an example, perhaps it should be in the Code of Construction or another management document. And as yet, I haven't been able to find that, so we would like that to be discussed as well fully and to understand where that wording could be included. That is needed because obviously then those documents going forward are binding. The next issue again is restrictive covenants. We have been discussing those in detail on a voluntary basis, and again it's the same issue that at the moment I have not been able to find where that wording has been included within the DCO. So that's another area that needs to be looked at. A further issue is in regard to access. One of the most important issues for farm businesses going forward is that they have access to all their land on a day-to-day basis. This is we do not really understand how this is going to happen at the present time during construction for landowners to be able to reach all of their land on a day-to-day basis. So how are they going to get access over the cables when it's been constructed? Further, there still needs to be a little bit more detail in regard to access that Orsted will require two cables once they have been constructed. So this is what is needed for maintenance in the future. A further issue that we would like to raise, and this has only been a concern, I suppose, relatively recently, is in regard to road closures. We understand, or we believe that we think Orsted are going to carry out, as in they will go underneath roads with some of the cables during construction, but we're not sure that's going to happen in every case, and we would like to know what notice will there be before there is a road closure. So, for example, at the minute being with Christmas, there are some farm businesses out there very busy at the moment selling Christmas trees. If there was a road to be closed in the wrong place, this could have a massive impact on a farm business. without anyone really having considered that. I would like to support Mr. Pearce in regard to his comments about National Grid. My final area there to say is that, yes, actually, the National Farmers Union does think that these projects just being looked at on an individual basis is wrong, and that actually going forward, these do need to be looked at, these big electrical schemes, planned on a much larger scale, and looked at what is being brought forward in the future, rather than each year just looking at an application as it comes forward to PINS. And I'm not going to raise anything else. Thank you.
Thank you. Can I just clarify one point on what you were saying about ducting? I understand you made the point that the landowners prefer ducting, and I understand that one reason for that is that it might be possible to lay ducts for phase two at the same time as the works for phase one.
That's right.
Depending on circumstances, which we'll explore further tomorrow, no doubt. Is that the reason, or from the landowner's perspective, is ducting also preferable for some other reason?
No, that is the reason. It's the phasing. Main reason, anyway. Yes.
I understand. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Hurst.
I'll make it brief, as it's getting late. I just want to highlight, on behalf of the parish of Moreton-on-the-Hill, the proposed site for a storage compound and traffic management issues in Moreton-on-the-Hill. Moreton-on-the-Hill is on the A1067, and until there is a western link constructed around Norwich, it is now the unofficial NDR, where a dual carriageway goes into a single carriageway onto a single track road in Western Longville. And as currently suggested, and in our written representation to PINS in July, so I won't go through our representation, it's in writing, but as currently suggested, the proposed storage compound for the HDD under the Wensum and under the A1067 is actually in an area that is prone to flooding, and is also the access carries the main water main to the whole area. So it's a particularly unattractive access and not a particularly sensible area for a storage compound to direct drill under the A1067 or indeed the Wensum. I've had words with the applicant tonight before this meeting, and I'm sure that if they put their mind to it, they can come to a better solution than they put to it at the moment. But the reason I want to be here is just to highlight the issue of planning, on the planning aspects, because there are actually 4,000 cars a day going around that corner, which is actually one car every 20 seconds, and it's not a particularly good construction site. That's all I have to say.
Thank you very much. Now, I think, unless I've missed everyone, that is everyone who indicated at the beginning of this session that they did want to speak. Thank you. And I also said that I would give the applicants the opportunity, if they wanted to make any comments now, that I would give them that opportunity to do so. Mr. Guyton, are you wishing to do that? I think it's probably easiest if you come forward here. Sorry, do you mind moving the chairs? Thank you. Okay, if you could just give your names before speaking for the audio.
So, Claire Broderick, Pinsent Mason, solicitor for the applicant. The applicant has noted all the points that have been raised this evening, and thanks everybody for participating. We feel that majority of the points have been addressed already in our responses to relevant reps, which is examination, library reference, rep 1-131, and our responses to written representations, reference rep 2-004. On some of the particular points raised, such as the choice of transmission system, the applicant provided a detailed briefing note, which was Appendix 22, which is Rep 1-164. We also addressed in detail the issue of EMF at the crossing point with Norfolk Vanguard, and that is to be found in Appendix 19.
With respect, it's not for the current situation, because Norfolk Vanguard have now actually stated they're going to use DC.
Okay. You have made your representation, and you do have an opportunity to make further written representation. So thank you for that. But I will let the applicants continue their comments.
That's in serious apologies.
So just the reference for that appendix was Rep 1-173. We will, as been stated, be discussing the issue of transmission technology at the hearing tomorrow, and the applicant's engineering experts will be present, so if there are any further questions on those particular points, we can address those tomorrow or follow up in writing. In respect of the points that Alton Parish Council made, discussions are ongoing between the applicant and Alton Parish Council, and the applicant is assessing and looking into the alternative that has been suggested. However, as was mentioned, its preference is still to proceed with the option presented in the DCR application. We'll be discussing the impacts of the construction compound on the hearing on Friday, and the applicant's experts in matters of traffic, LVIA, noise, will be present to discuss the impacts at that hearing. That was all the comments. The only final point was just on the general point relating to the selection of the connection point, and that had been addressed in a response to a written question. And also National Grid did submit their own response to that question for deadline 1, which is Rep 1-070, is where their response on this particular point can be found. The applicant hasn't got anything further.
Thank you. Well, as you say, there are a number of points that we'll be picking up at one or other hearing later in the week, so I won't ask anything further here, although we may have something to ask about some of those points as the week progresses. So thank you. That completes the contributions from the interested parties this evening. I just want to remind you of the timetable. There's a deadline of 14th of December for the receipt of any written submissions of the oral cases and for any related post-hearing submissions. And just the overall timetable, the examination must be completed within 6 months, and we are anticipating that we will need the whole of 6 months for this case. which means that the examination must close by the 2nd of April 2019. There is a date for a second open floor hearing, should anyone request to be heard at that. The date is in our timetable, 29th of January. I'm not sure whether we've completely fixed a location for that, but we've said that it will be at a location convenient to the northern part of the route. But in fact, that doesn't mean you have to have interest in the northern part of the route. The open floor hearings are open to all interested parties, whichever part of the route they may be interested in. So all I need to do now is to thank everyone very much for your attendance this evening and your contributions. As you will have seen, we've been making careful notes of those and the number of points which I'm sure will be looked at further as this examination progresses. So thank you very much for your contributions this evening. This hearing is now closed. Thank you.